Pure work, is it?
Record.
Is it recording? Yes.
Yes, it's recording. Super nice. Okay. Then I will still leave your the camera. Yeah, I think it's nicer.
Yeah, good.
Thank
Thanks.
you. Is it loud enough for you? Is it okay with the sound? I will just see here if I can make it a little bit louder.
Hello, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we
Good.
can hear you.
Okay, nice.
Camera is off.
Yes, oh sorry. What do I click here?
I mean, it's also possible without if you think it's better for the connection, but otherwise, I think it's also nice to see you.
Let's
But
see
setting.
the connection, but okay, let's try
Yeah,
like this.
let's try. Okay, thank you.
Okay, good. Shall we start now? I think we have like a little bit of 30 minutes before we end this session today. And thank you for joining this morning's slot with Florian. I hope that it was very engaging and insightful for you guys. But yeah, let us go a little bit with what we saw last week. So if you remember, we saw a little bit of a recap of MFA methods. And we went a little bit deeper into the definitions of economy-wide MFA, looking at the main material categories, the main indicators, where to find data, the steps on how to perform these economy-wide MFA with the example of this Eurostat questionnaire, step by step. And we at the end we did a little bit of the cross-country comparisons of the main indicators for economy-wide MFA. For today's lecture, you saw in the morning we have this guest lecture Florian, with a little bit more explanation on the economy-wide MFA here at the Swiss level and more into that. And but for this second lecture, we're gonna look a little bit into the urban metabolism. Well, we'll try to cover the differences between urban metabolism and urban MFA, which may sound the same, but there are slight differences in that. We're gonna be looking at the system boundaries of cities. You know, a little bit of a reflection on how to account for these boundaries, a couple of accounting approaches for this particular element of urban metabolism, where to find data, and if we have time, we will look into a couple of insights from urban material flow analysis or urban metabolism in general and the application to policies. Let's see about this last point. If not, we can just take it over for next lecture. Okay, now urban metabolism versus urban MFA. In general, it is important to make this distinction between these two. Urban metabolism is like a broader concept, and as compared to urban MFA, which is more like an established method that one applies to try to understand this urban metabolism. This image here is I think I put this one on lecture one or lecture two about the concept of metabolism, the discussion we had about the typologies of organisms. So it's basically like a metaphor to compare a city to a living organism, right? And in the sense that a living organism requires resources to grow, to maintain, to reproduce, etc. And it happens something similar with a city itself, right? So and we do that. We do these the comparison, let's say, for with this living organism, and we are trying to explain some phenomena that exist in cities. So if looking at the cities, if we go more into detail, and what we are basically interested in this course is to really measure the flows, right? So measure the materials that go into the city, measure the materials that are within the city, and measure the materials that also go out of the city, right? So for this next slide, last time I think I showed you some similar slide like this, but it was related to industrial ecology and the evolution through the years, how often this concept of industrial ecology was used. And in this case, we are showing the use of the urban metabolism over time, right? So what is important here is that this is a it's a comparison, it's a metaphor, but it has been used differently over time, this concept. The idea of these urban metabolism exists since, I don't know, like how much is it, like 150 years ago, started to appear. And at the beginning, it was used to describe a completely a different phenomena back in the days as compared to today. So in the early years, we have this the Marx theory with these social ecology, in which they say that it was used to look into how extractivist or capital society was, right? So later on, it concept evolved a little bit, and then the human ecology appeared in the years around 1920s, and the objective there was to understand how does a city grow, how population grow, right? So around the years 1960, more or less, there was this engineer that kind of started to actually measure the flows, ex entering and exiting city, like an imaginary city. Like this person was doing this reflection exercise. Like we have a city of 1 million inhabitants. What will happen? What would be the resources needed for that to operate? What would be the resources need that going out of that particular system, right? A couple of years later, you began to have other researchers or other thinkers who started to say that the city was like an ecosystem, right? You can have a different types of ecosystem. You can have a forest, but you can have the city as an ecosystem as a whole, right? So the thinking exercise was, what are the species living in this ecosystem? What are the flows within this ecosystem? What are the interrelationships? What are the connections between these species and the processes, right? A little bit later, around the years 2000, there was a reemergence of this Marx social ecology, where we began thinking about what would be the political implications of these material flows, of these material stocks, right? So that's basically the general idea of this. But in this particular section of the political implications, we must be aware that there are actors that influence in these flows, right? So, and there is people to get access to these flows, and there are people that don't. So, as well, there are some injustices and imbalances within these flows. And overall, these people were the ones that look into this political ecology, as they frame it. And one of the most recent uses of the urban metabolism idea or concept. Some people came up and say, okay, we need to start mixing things, not looking at things by separately. And they decided to, for example, use the industrial ecology concept that actually measures the stuff. And the other one is the political ecology, the kind of make sense of those things and put the politics behind these flows, right? So as you see, urban metabolism is not something that is fixed, and that there is only one very square definition of it, right? And yeah, so what I want you to keep in mind is that each definition or each sub-discipline of this urban metabolism, each one of those says something different, right? And then urban ecology, which is more or less of about the ecosystem, tends to tell you something different as well. So why is this important? Because you will find different things depending on the definition that you use, depending on the lens in which you see your problem, right? So depending on the tools you have, the tools you decide to use, you will find something very, very different on this. For today's lecture, we are trying to use the definition that is marked here in this red square, which is the for urban metabolism. We are defining this urban metabolism as the total technical and socioeconomic processes within a city. It uses this mass balance accounting or approach of these related resources, perhaps using input and output tables, and considers also the city hinterland or the surrounding areas of the urban environment being analyzed. Now, why is urban metabolism relevant? Well, as I mentioned before, there are different phenomena in the cities that are relevant to be understood. So basically we have this black box that we consider, where that we have inflows and outflows. This is the typical material flow analysis, right? But sometimes you have you even have processes within the system, right? In cities, these are a little bit more complex systems. So within the city, you have the society, you have the built environment, you have the culture, you have the politics, you have many, many different things, interaction between each other. Yeah, everything, it's like working to keep the city running, let's say, let's put it like that. And what's very interesting also is to see how these flows interact with your system, and also how this system directs your flows, right? So for instance, if you are depending on your economic system, you might have different flows. A productive city might expand, perhaps, may use more concrete and more energy, or more water, let's put it like that. So there is a real interrelationship between what's inside the box and also what is outside of the box. So one issue that arises in these type of analysis is well, basically, how to define a city. What are the system boundaries of city? Is it just a few kilometers around? Is it based on the number of buildings, or what would be the definition of this system boundaries of city. And if you remember, in for the steps of MFA, one of the crucial steps in performing an MFA is to actually define your system, right? So one of the first steps. And I have a question for you guys, maybe in just like 2 minutes or so. How would you define the system boundaries of a city? Can anyone have an example of that? And maybe I can turn off the volume here so I can hear you. Any ideas or any comments on that?
So we could use maybe the boundary, like the urban extent until like a very of buildings, and then very quickly rural areas that you can
Did you hear that, Francisco?
No, can you repeat that? Yeah, because I think it's
Yeah. So she was suggesting that the boundary of the city could be the municipality boundary, like the is it do you mean the legal boundary of a city?
okay,
Other idea?
yes, the administrative boundary, that's a good example of that. Yes, any other idea of how to define a city?
Yes, we have another suggestion.
It could be an economical problem. Like there is not only the city, but also like the people living outside of the city that are coming to the city to work and for example.
So it could be a kind of an economic boundary, economic bubble, because also people living outside of the city would come into the city to work or to do other
Okay.
activities.
Yeah. Then it would not be not much related to the geographical extent, but also, but more on the economic activity that you are doing and commuting from your residence to the workplace. That could be also an idea of how to define a city. Okay, I have a couple of examples next of on how to define a city. So this is an example of cities in Switzerland. So you have a couple of main cities. In here, these are defined by the statistical office, basically looking at density, right? So the number of inhabitants per square kilometers. If you see here, you have a different degrees of the density in a given area, and these cities here in Switzerland may be considered as a village or a town in a different context, right? So context is very important in this. Yeah, there is also the European level, we have Eurostat, which has statistics dedicated also to main cities, regions, cantons, etc. And their particular definition of a city is an urban center of at least 50,000 inhabitants, right? So for Eurostat, that's the definition of a city. Which is the very small point on the upper left corner of this graph here. You can also find other boundaries such as the greater city, which is with an area going a bit beyond the core of the city, beyond the administrative city boundaries. Then you have the functional urban area, including, in addition to the core, the commuting zone, your colleagues mentioned a bit earlier. And finally, you have the metropolitan area, right? So there are different ways to how you could define a city. Also, you may find different types of flow from one administrative boundary to another. you may find similarities as well, right? So here I have an example. So let's imagine we have three territories, territory A, B, and C. We have let's say territory in A is densely built. Territory B is a little bit more renewable energy generation and so on. And territory C, which is a little bit leaning more towards manufacturing and industrial activities, right? So you will have different profiles in these three territories. You will have different material flowing into and out of their own system. One could be classified as more sustainable than others, perhaps, right? So maybe B is more sustainable than others, or maybe others require larger or smaller quantities of materials for their operation, for their expansion. However, if we only look at the individual boundaries, we might get an idea on just the status or the health of the of that system, but we cannot look at them in better say we should not look at them in isolation from each other. These systems are dependent on other economies for the material requirements, and so not only for those close by, but perhaps even internationally. So I'll leave you with something to think about is how do we define the boundaries of the system then? How do we define the boundaries of this city? Okay, for a couple of accounting approaches and methods for urban metabolism, we have this approach, top down and bottom up. And basically, we have this method of territorial based and consumption based. In general, the top-down approach or the bottom-up approach depends on the many things, on the research question or the data availability, and you name it, right? So one of these approaches is the top-down and the bottom-up, and one of the ideas of these, for example, in general on the top-down accounting approach, is that we look at the system from the top, and we're trying to get a whole picture at this macro level. So it is rather something that shows us how the system is performing overall, like in a bigger picture, right? So, and this is very nice if you want, for example, if you like to compare with other cities or with a nation, or but it's not really open what is really happening in the inside of this black box of the city itself. So it does not give us many insights of what processes might be happening within this system. So just very top numbers. So what enters, what exits in the system, but not so much what happens within this system. And the other one, which is the bottom-up accounting, this is well, in this figure, this is a concrete example of a bottom-up accounting approach. The idea of this bottom-up is to start with specifics and then build up, trying to go up. So aggregating until you reach this higher level. In this particular example of the year 1982, there was someone who went to Morocco to this city of Kenitra. I think that's the name of the city. And back then, there was not much of methods on how to perform the urban metabolism analysis. So this person went into the city and collected the data, right? So they found like a typology of three different communities. And so yeah, the person used surveys, interviews, and whatever tool that they had at hand to get information on the consumption habits, how much of what material, what type of energy were they using, what type of food they were eating, what material are in their houses, how they build their houses, their roads, etc. And then the analysis was upscaled to the city level, right? So this person did all the upscale for all of the inhabitants and resulted in a figure like this. So with all the data aggregated and giving like a fuller picture of the area of study. So they went from the ground up, so the bottom up. Something similar for the from the bottom up accounting. We have this person that did the analysis on an Indian village, Sarawan, I think that's the name. And so yeah, they did pretty much the same approach. They went there, they started to collect data, and then just build up the whole analysis. If you want to do this analysis yourself, you first go to the place with some couple of questions ready. You look at things, you document as much relevant things as possible. How's the material, what type of work they're doing, the crops that they are growing, the roads, buildings, etc., and create like a from that you start to measure things and then build up until you create this macro image. So so basically, there are some pros and cons of that you can see in these bottom up and top down approaches. So basically, the case of the bottom up, it's giving a full picture, but that would be related to the workload. Also in collecting the many, many facets of the place you are studying. If you are, for example, collecting data on large cities, you might find it difficult to differentiate between different neighborhoods, for example. And this will be very time consuming and difficult to replicate in other context as well. Now, quickly going to the other approach could be the territorial production and consumption-based accounting. So the one on the left, so the territorial approach will be like a typical MFA, and on the right would be the consumption. The consumption base would be a typical input-output analysis. On the territorial one, on the left, basically we measure what comes in and what comes out, right? So, and in the consumption based on the right, besides measuring what comes in and out, you can also account for the materials that were needed to produce those goods, the materials that were excavated somewhere to produce that good, certain materials that were used somewhere else, and the many, many waste and other flows required to produce that particular good that you're looking, right? So in the consumption approach, you will take like a, let's say like a life cycle, like a whole life cycle of the product, right? So basically, a territorial production-based approach would look something like this. Materials go in, materials go out. This is an example of a study focused on Brussels for the year 2010. You can see the different material categories and also the sectors in which these materials are going or going out as well. So for energy, water, and materials. Similarly, now applying the consumption-based accounting approach, we see the same territory of Brussels, and this example We show this one is about the metals. Okay, yeah, the metals. You can see here that immediately the majority of the metals for Brussels comes from Africa, and a little bit that comes from Australia as well, and then the rest of the world. For the embodied gross energy use in Brussels, also we have this image here. We can see that, for example, a large fraction comes from Europe, and in smaller amounts in Africa and China and other countries. And if you see here on the European level, you see that most of these resources have Europe as the final destination. And that's because in here, these materials, these energy resources, these are further processes. So they are refined to create this final manufactured product, and then it is consumed by somebody else. In the particular example of Brussels, in this case, the energy system of Brussels is based mainly on natural gas, and this is brought usually from the Netherlands, Norway, and other close by countries. So that's why there is like a big chunk of the flows coming from the from Europe. And just quickly on this, pros and cons from the territorial, you could be considered a little bit of more accurate data, or but more accurate in the sense that there is a more frequently published data. There is more or less like a database or something from where you can extract that information to actually do these analyses. And by that, it could be an enable for cross comparisons between the other cities. On the other hand, the consumption approach gives a little bit on the insight of the embodied flows, their origin. So it gives other type of information, more global insight beyond the already established systems, right? City systems. And yeah, so the concept of the territorial is that there is no indirect flow insights as with the consumption based. For the concept of consumption of the consumption base, they are good for the bigger picture, like an international picture, but since these use input output tables, it might be difficult to use them for an urban level. Usually the input output tables are more or less in the at higher level, and if you want to bring down those higher level into the city, so you will have to make lots of assumptions because no city is the same. So you need to account for these uncertainties. And yeah, so basically what I wanted to tell you, since we are running out of time, is that no, there's no unique accounting method. It will depend on the question you are trying to respond, data available, time, etc. And okay, if you have time, there is a specialized web page that looks at material flows and stocks across the world and documents methods, case studies, databases, etc., which is called Metabolism of Cities. The link is in the slide. It would be a very nice opportunity to get familiarized with this. Yeah, if you're interested in that. Okay. Again, there is many accounting methods around. Where to find data? Again, this web page has localized case studies across the world. You can just zoom in into this map and select the city of your interest. You see here that using particularly using this MFA method, there is around 70 oral metabolism studies. You can find the LCA and environmental footprint or whatnot, but MFA methods around 70. And there is information on Lausanne, Geneva, Zurich, etc. So basically, the web page looks something like this. You have the content of the case study. You have also the infrastructure defined on that. And well, so that's the idea for today's lecture. I guess we don't have time for the next time for the final section, but we can just take over from the following next week. All right. Thank you guys for joining.
Thank you, Francisco. I see you. We see us later in the
Okay,
afternoon.
thank you.
Thank you.
See you. Bye-bye.
Ciao.